Why is that? That these things can be, you know, all these, some of them are provided in duplicate, so that if in spare parts. So if one eye is lost, the other can do its function. If both eyes are lost, somehow this can do its function also. Yeah. But how is it that if the life is lost, it doesn't have a spare part? It's stepping wheel to do its duty. How is it that that has been, who ordained that the life breath or prana, the life force or prana should be supreme? Why didn't he so ordain that the eyes must be supreme? And even after the life comes to an end, the eyes keep seeing. Possible. It's possible. You have to look at it without any set ideas. It is a set ideas, rigid ideas, that prevent us from asking any questions at all. We take the whole thing for granted. And then again, we have to be like little children asking, why is the duck able to swim so nicely and why are you not able to swim? Mm-hmm. It's a simple question which needs to arise in the human mind. And so instead of saying that, oh no, you know, everything, all these things depend upon life and therefore, you know, when life departs the body, all these things die. Instead of assuming that, ask, why is it? These are all separate functions. Breathing is one function. Circulation is another function. The brain is another function. Isn't it possible that whoever ordained the whole lot could have twisted the whole thing? And even after life departs the body, the eyes could still be made to function, or maybe the legs could be made to function. You know, what a tremendous saving it is. If after I die, I am still able to see and walk, you don't have to have a coffin and all that stuff. I could. That is the grave I walk over there. Kena pranam pratama prayati yukta. One has to have a healthy sense of humor in order to understand the Upanishad. Kena pranam pratama prayati yukta. Who is it that ordained that when life departs, everything comes to a stop? Whereas when the eyesight has departed, nothing came to a stop. When I lost my sense of hearing, nothing came to a halt. But when breath stops, everything stops. Silly. That's the question. I hope you also realize that it is not a theological trip. The man does not go to his teacher and say, please, can you show me God? It's too childish. And if you behave like that, they tell you to screw your nose or do something and say, here is God. Right? You deserve it. You get what you deserve. No. This is a fundamental question, simple question. Fundamental and simple. And I must see this. I must realize this. I must come to grips with this. Who makes me think and function? All the rest is added on to it. Keneisham vacha mimam vadanti chakshusvetram kavyo devo yunakti, all the sense functionings. Who is it that ordains all this? And how do all these function? That's the question. And what does the Guru do? How would you answer the question? God. Oh, I see God. Uh-huh. Answering one word with another word is not an answer. Is evading the issue. On the other hand, can you provide a verbal answer to this question? The verbal action being already once removed from thought. Verbal action is prompted by thought. And I am asking a question concerning thought. Who prompts thought? And is there a verbal answer to this? And does the teacher then put you off saying, "Ah, don't ask such silly questions. I'll give you chocolate, lollipop." No, then he has not performed his role. How does he enable you to find the light in such a way that the question is answered non-verbally? That is Upanishad. And therefore it is so difficult to commit the whole thing down to writing. And therefore it is that when you read a book called Upanishad, it often makes no sense at all. You go away with a bunch of words and you can repeat it ad nauseam. Go on repeating it. Shrotrasya shrotram chakshurasya chakshuh. Sahu pranasya pranaha. Where is it gone? I repeat it every day before baths. It doesn't even help me clean the body very well. It makes no sense at all, it has no value at all. It has to be the same literal, not merely encounter, but confrontation. You must be alert to be able to question again. I must be able again to confront the situation. Both you, my teacher, and I, the student, must come together, ready, vigilant. Not without affection, not with hostility, but not with docile submissiveness. Then whatever you say, all that, I go, no. I must have supreme and tremendous affection for you, devotion to you, but at the same time, intense devotion also to the job. In another Upanishad called Shvetashvatara Upanishad, there is a lovely mantra. He who has supreme devotion to the Guru and equal yasya deve para bhakti yatha deve tatha guru tasi je gatada hyartha prakashante mahatmanah. He who has supreme devotion to the Guru and equally supreme devotion, two supremes, equally supreme devotion to God. Who is God here? The question. And to him is the truth of the Upanishad revealed easily. So I come to you, I have great devotion to you. Otherwise I wouldn't come to you. But the devotion that I have for you does not prevent me from being totally devoted to the quest. The quest being God. The truth being God. And I am devoted to truth and therefore I come to you to help me find this truth. I am devoted to you, I am devoted to this truth. One not inferior to the other. One not less than the other. I am no less devoted to you than to the truth that I seek. In that encounter, almost confrontation, where my devotion to you is not questioned by my devotion to truth. I don't say, well, I am not satisfied with what you are saying. Yeah, nonsense. No. Because I am devoted to you. I don't reject you because I am seeking this tremendous truth. But I am not going to abandon that swallowing a bunch of words that you are uttering. Because I am devoted to you, well, you say God, we'll accept God. Yeah, right. Don't worry him. Don't bother him too much. No. The devotion to both these is equal and equally strong. Then what does the guru do? He does not turn you away because there is this affection, there is this devotion. He cannot answer the question verbally because the verbal action is twice removed from truth. By sitting near each other, there is already an exchange of spiritual energy. That is what is called Shaktipata. Shaktipata means an exchange of energy. And the exchange of energy is possible again. Yesse deva para bhakti yatha deva tatha guru. Only then is that exchange of energy possible. And it is almost entirely dependent upon the student, the seeker. If I am a seeker and I come to you with whole soul devotion, which means whole soul, total devotion, I am devoted to you with my mind, and with my heart and with my whole being, it is then that Shaktipada takes place. The transmission of energy takes place. And in that, there is a non-verbal understanding. We referred to this some time ago, the famous story of Dakshinamurti. It is said that four sages called as Sanat Kumaras, and to make it worse, they say that these four sages were the direct mind-born sons of Brahma, the creator of the universe, which means they were such brilliant beings. Not human-born, dull and stupid beings. Direct products of Brahma, the creator, and not through the usual channels of birth, but direct mind-born, boom, they jumped out of his head, the four of them. And you can imagine perfection of wisdom they should have had. And they were confused. They were wandering and wandering and wandering. They knew everything. Because they were the sources of all the scriptures. So it's obvious they knew everything. And while they were wandering in search of enlightenment, so don't despair, you and I are not so bad. While they were wandering in search of enlightenment, they saw sitting under a tree, and as soon as they saw his young boy, as soon as they saw this young boy, sitting under a tree, they say, that's it. Don't say they were tired of wanting. If they were tired of wanting, they would go to sleep. They're full of energy and zest and zeal, enthusiasm for this truth. When they saw him, they knew. When they saw him, they knew. How does one know who the who it is, whom he should approach? I come to you and I look at you and I feel you are the person I am looking for. And I must seek your help and assistance. That is, you are going to be my guru, sort of, yeah? You are not at my guru because the enlightenment has not taken place. But you are going to my guru. How does one know? That question again, even that question cannot be answered. If there is a herd of cattle, about 50 cows, grazing on a farm, and if you have one calf, you don't know the mother. All the cows look alike to you. What do you do? How to find out whose baby this calf is? Just let it go, go straight to the mother. How does it know? That's it. In exactly the same way, the seeker knows where to find what. If you are a seeker, that's the whole problem. If you are a true seeker, then you know. Otherwise not. Otherwise you go and look at... He's wearing a funny jersey, I don't like it. It's red, maybe he's a communist, I don't know. That's it. You go on from one to the other. You can go on, keep going for a long time. Probably they also did. Or probably they merely looked at somebody and said, no, it doesn't inspire, that's all. The other person doesn't inspire me. I'm not going to question him, judge him, but I merely, we don't relate to each other, that's all. It's not judging who is a good guru, bad guru, better guru. I'm not interested. He may have his own millions of followers. We don't click. When they went to this, when they saw this young man, it clicked. And they gravitated towards him, sat down at his feet, looked up to him, and he looked. Perhaps he smiled and raised his hand in what is known as chin mudra, gesture of wisdom. That's all they needed. They were enlightened. Unless you, the gesture of wisdom meant, unless you abandon these three, self-realization is not possible. What are those three? Physical, verbal, mental action, waking, dreaming, sleep, in all this. The physical body, the astral body, the causal body. Abandon all these and then you realize that fullness alone exists. The infinite alone exists. So, verbal exchange of words is not a necessary part of this encounter, of the guru-disciple encounter. In the case of the disciple, all that he needs is that total devotion. Total devotion to the truth and equally total devotion to the teacher who represents the truth for the present. Who represents the truth and whose validity or importance is the truth. I am devoted to you, but I am equally devoted to the truth. And my devotion to you is the devotion to the truth. so that I am not hooked on to your personality or your whatever it is. That we are not together forming a cult. I am devoted, totally devoted to you, my teacher, because I am totally devoted to the truth that is embodied, enshrined in you, and that is going to be revealed in our encounter. If that is clear, then the path is clear immediately. There are no obstacles from there on. And the transmission takes place mostly non-verbally. And even when words are used, the transmission is still non-verbal. Even when words are used, the actual transmission is non-verbal. And there again, both of us have to be sensitive to this, to see when you are using a word, to see if I am responding to it or not. And therefore, the Upanishad involves a dialogue, not merely a monologue. You ask a question and the teacher goes on answering. That's classroom. Here it is dialogue, so that at every stage the teacher is watching to see if you are actually responding, if we are speaking the same language. And here in the Keno Upanishad, the teacher says, you want to know that, that's quite simple, very easy. Who makes the mind think, function? The power that is within the mind. When you read it in a on a printed page, it makes no sense at all. You even tend to laugh at it. What a funny answer. He asks, who is it that makes the mind think? He says, there is a power within that mind. That power makes his work. Or, if you are of the faithful type, you say, I see, there is a power within this, there is a Shakti within this, and then your grandson starts making an image of Shakti. Shakti means, Durga, or Lakshmi, or Saraswati. Shrotrasya Shrotram, that is there in your ear, in your sense of hearing. It is that which makes hearing here. It is that which makes mind produce a thought. What is it? I came to you with a question and you are throwing it back at me. Yes, of course. I mean, if you find that out, I'll lead you from there. You don't have to. This discipline is necessary. Right? I come to you in order that I may get the intensity of the quest. Can I not sit under a tree and do the same thing? Yes, you can. If you have the same intensity that Nachiketas had. If the same intensity that the Ramana Maharishi had. And if the question burns your heart so intensely that you don't need any external assistance. The external assistance is a distraction. You sit there. You can go into samadhi. If that is not possible, you need merely someone to keep that intensity intense all the time. In order that the simple answer which seems to beg the question. I am asking you, my teacher, who is it that makes the mind think? And you are merely answering, which is a no answer, saying there is a power within the mind which makes it think. That's not what I asked. What is it? Here is a cap. Do you know what that is? Or, if I drop into some kind of a theological faithfulness, I see, there is God in my mind, and it is that God that makes me think. And the guru comes and says, hey, careful, that is a thought. Yen manasa namanute yenahur mano matam tadeva brahmattam viddi nedam yedidam upasate. There's a little bit of prodding. Hey, be careful. If you fall into that trap, you will never get out of it. If you fall into the trap of knowing, thinking that you know what produces a thought, then you will never get out of that. You've heard of that famous expression, thinking objectively, don't you? I don't know if there is a real meaning to that. I have never understood it myself. Thinking objectively, what is thinking objectively? I am looking at this, I am thinking it is a cab. What is thinking objectively? What does the cab think about the thought? What does the cab think about the mind that produced the thought? That is thinking objectively. The mind creates a thing called God or power or something else. That itself being a thought. And if the mind accepts the thought as the reality, then there is no further inquiry. It's finished. I'll remain the same fool forever and ever and ever. And therefore, the teacher here throws a bomb, torpedoes the whole thing. The whole technique, the whole method, the whole approach is torpedoed right in the beginning. Yen manasana manute. Don't think that you have understood the answer. Oh, then? See how the intensity is created and kept up. Then? Yenahur manomatam. It is by that you are able to think. Hey, that's the question I came to you with. Okay, understand that. Come on. Dig deeper and see. Deva tamma brahmatvam viddhi. That is Brahman. Brahman is not a set of alphabets. B-R-A-H-M-A-N. Brahman. That's an alphabet. That's a word. That's a veil. That has nothing whatsoever to do with the truth. Nedam edidam upasate. Not what you worship here. That's a literal translation. What is God? What is the truth? What is the ultimate truth? Oh, that which enables you to think, that which enables you to breathe, that which enables you to see. That which alone is, and because of which all this is. Now I understand. Oh, foolish Jesus! Immediately. Yadi manya sesuve deti dabrameva vinodam tumbetta brahmano rupam. A very almost scandalous attack. If you think you know it, you are a fool, is this. Yasya matam tasya matam matam yasya navedasaha. He who knows not that he knows. Because that being not an object of thought, that being not a product of your mind, how does How does the mind know it? The mind can only know what it has itself produced. The mind can comprehend only what it has itself given birth to. The mind is the only cannibal in the world. The worst form of cannibal. It produces something and it chews up, eats it, consumes it. So what the mind knows is an object, not the subject. It is that enables you to see. It is that enables you to hear. It is that has appointed the life force as supreme.
Satoma Sagamaya, Tamasoma, Jyotir Gamaya, Matyorma, Mutangamaya, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.